Hello and welcome to Louisiana Public Square. I'm Beth Courtney.
And I'm Kirby Goidell, Director of LSU's Public Policy Research Lab. A $1 trillion gap. That's what exists between the retirement benefits that states have promised current and retired workers and the amount they have to pay them. Louisiana's gap, for its four-state retirement system, is almost triple the payroll of the employees covered by those systems. Governor Jindal is introducing pension reforms this session to tackle a large portion of that debt and transform the system that created it.
Well, for new hires, the governor seeks to redesign the state's pension plan, moving from the current defined benefit model to a cash balance one similar to a 401k, but with a safety net. For current workers, though, who have never had to contribute to Social Security while with the state, retirement may be their only safety net. Many of them are wondering now if proposals to change the amount of their contribution and benefits will put their future nest egg at risk.
Michael Evans has been a Louisiana state employee for 15 and a half years. He's been following the proposed changes to the state retirement system with some concern.
They're looking to change the retirement age to 67. They're asking me to contribute more into the retirement system. And then they're also going to lower my retirement benefits by lowering my final average compensation.
Evan says leaving state service is an option if the changes go through.
When I started with the state, I had a contract with them, and that required me to pay a set percentage of my salary. And in exchange for paying that set amount into the retirement system, once I met certain criteria that were based upon my age and my years of service, I would receive my full retirement benefits. And I just basically want that contract to be honored.
Through a number of factors, including poor initial funding, political promises, and investment losses, the state's four retirement systems have accumulated an unfunded accrued liability, or UAL, of $18.5 billion. UAL is the gap between what the systems have on hand to pay future benefits versus what they have promised.
A dollar that you spend on state retirement is a dollar that you may not be spending on higher education or health care or some of the critical services that that people depend on.
Jan Moeller is the director of the nonprofit Louisiana Budget Project. He says that even if you're not a state worker, you are ultimately affected by the UAL.
The cost to the state every year of providing for its employees' retirement is going to keep going up. And if you don't raise taxes, that means there's going to be less money available for other services.
Well, I don't think I need to tell you. Any of you that know me probably know by now, I'm opposed to raising taxes.
Governor Jindal dismissed a tax hike as an option when he introduced his pension reform plan to Rotary Club members in January. Instead, he is proposing raising the retirement age of new and some current employees, increasing the amount that current employees contribute to their retirement, and changing how their retirement benefits are calculated.
If costs continue on the current path, we could see another $3 billion or more added to the UAL by the end of this decade.
Even though it accounts for the largest share of the UAL, the teachers' retirement system will be exempt from any proposals, since education reform is also on the governor's agenda this session. Higher ed members, though, would be affected. And the state police system, which will see a 13% jump in its employer contribution this fiscal year, has also been spared. The bulk of the changes will affect the 40,000 members of the Louisiana State Employees Retirement System, or LASERS. Frank Joubert heads the Retired State Employees Association. Despite its name, Joubert says the RSEA represents active employees as well as retirees. Joubert feels the governor's plan changes the rules for state employees in the middle of the game. He has seen the largest outcry against the proposal to raise the retirement age to 67.
It just picks an arbitrary date and time. It's not factored in any way, shape, or form with years and service. And it's not scheduled in or phased in over time. It just picks a point in time and, you know, drops the bomb on you all at once.
Currently, state employees can retire at any age after 30 years of service or at age 55 with 25 years of service. Under the proposal, state workers will only receive full benefits if they work until age 67. Evans says his benefits would significantly reduce under the reform plan.
I'd have 26 years at age 55, which would entitle me to receive about 65% of my retirement benefits. Under the proposed changes, that benefit would reduce to about probably less than 20%, because they're going to actuarially reduce it from age 67, which is the proposed new retirement age.
Evans would need to work another 12 years in order to receive full benefits under the proposed changes. Increasing the amount that state employees contribute without any enhancement to their retirement benefit could be considered a tax, which it was by former House Speaker Jim Tucker last session when a similar proposal was defeated. And changing the retirement benefit calculation for current employees could pose some legal issues.
A person signs on under a certain set of rules and guidelines to change those rules and or diminish those benefits through changes that are being proposed could very well be a breach of contractual rights, which is set up under the U.S. Constitution. And to diminish those benefits under the state constitution, Article 10, Section 29, would also be an impairment of those rights.
Courts in other states, though, have supported retirement plan modifications if they were found to be necessary and the remaining benefits were reasonable. What is not reasonable, Joubert says, is how any new revenue generated would actually be used.
The statutes or bill as it's currently written, the monies do go to the general fund, in which case it would have absolutely no effect on the UAL, either positively or negatively. In fact, it's only helping the general fund and help offset the projected deficit in the general fund itself.
We're looking at the big picture of Louisiana, crisis in health care, crisis in education, crisis in higher education, fiscal crises. So we have to keep an eye on how we can move all of Louisiana forward at the same time.
Democratic Senator Elbert Guillory is chair of the Senate Retirement Committee. He sees the reform package as a starting point, with the particulars yet to be hashed out.
We promised workers that at the end of 20, 30 years of service, we would take care of you. We cannot keep that promise if we let these systems crash. So we have to do some things that are sacrificial things right now.
If the pension reforms pass, Joubert predicts a huge departure of state employees by October, the last chance to retire under the current rules.
Any savings that might accrue to the systems under the proposals that the governor has submitted might actually be lost and even gotten worse because there'd be such a mass exodus of employees.
Despite it all, Evans remains cautiously optimistic.
I'm hoping that there's a better way that they can take care of that UAL without unfairly altering our retirement system and having such a negative impact on so many people.
Joining us in our studio are other optimistic individuals, including Baton Rouge area residents who were randomly recruited and surveyed for us by LSU's Public Policy Research Lab. We also have members of the Retired State Employee Association. Welcome, everyone. Reviewing some of the survey responses, when asked if teachers and first responders should be exempt from proposed pension reform, 3/4 of those surveyed disagreed. 23% agreed with sparing these groups from changes, and 2% were unsure. When asked about the proposal for state workers to contribute an additional 3% to their retirement plans, 57% support this idea. 36% oppose it, and 7% were neutral. But when it came to only allowing cost of living allowances to retirement plans when the state budget has funds to cover them, 55% of respondents opposed this reform. 43% supported the idea, while 2% were neutral. And when responding to the statement, drastic cuts would have to be made to areas such as health care and higher education if the state pension system isn't reformed, those surveyed were nearly evenly split. 50% agreed, 48% disagreed, and 2% were unsure. So let's start there. How many of you are worried about your retirement and about the state retirement plan? Judy?
Right now, I'm 56 years old, so I would be exempt right now on a lot of the proposals. But to make a change like this to the... My coworkers, I know a lot of people who have vested. They have I know someone who's going to have almost 30 years in within a year, but she's in her 40s. So now with this, she would have to work till she's 67. She would be working for the state for 60-something years with a reduced rate, less money.
Do people agree? Do we have to do something? Elton?
I think we have to do something, but I'm not sure that the current proposals are what anybody will be able to agree to. The legislature will certainly have a lot of people on both sides that they have to reconcile.
Good. Philip?
What I would do if I'm making proposals to change the system is be as precise as you can about how big the problem is dollar-wise. It's hard to get all the public educated on these issues, but get it out there and let it start seeping in. But I would like to see more actual numbers. I think something needs to be done, but I don't know how severe it is relative to the other problems of the state.
Okay. Kurt?
Yeah, I sort of agree with Philip. I would like to know how much of the overall budget is the retirement that we're paying. Like, what percentage of it is going to retirement, to see if it's such a big deal? Do we need to throw the whole system into an uproar over it, or can we deal with other issues like education or things like that, and then put this at a later, you know, for a later thing? Because I'm not exactly sure how much we actually spend on this. You know,
do you all not think it's big? Surely.
How did we get here in the first place? Why are we in such a debt? Mm-hmm. What did we do as a state? Obviously, we did something wrong, right? Mm-hmm. And so why are we asking our state employees to really take a cut in pay, is what we're asking them to do, and then work longer? Is that fair to a group of people who supposedly have been loyal to this state?
Mm-hmm. What happens if we do nothing?
Well, haven't we been doing that?
We've been doing nothing,
right,
exactly.
Well, that's what I'd like to know. As part of the proposal, mm-hmm. say, well, we need to make these changes. If we don't make these changes, what can go, you know, how bad is the problem going to get? Now, Jindal, in the segment before the beginning of the show.
Who can answer that question? Who knows how big the problem is?
Well, we'll bring some experts out, but we know the problem is big, right?
And obviously, if you're talking in terms of trillions of dollars, and it doesn't sound fair to put it on the state employees, but if the system goes broke, everybody loses everything.
Okay. Philip, you want to?
If I can throw in again, yeah. My suggestion was, Americans consider themselves fair-minded, and mm-hmm. I think the problem that Americans that are not employees of a government system, what they see is that in their retirement plans, if they have a 401k plan or 403b or whatever, they're having to put more money up because they're not getting as high returns as they used to get. So the problem, obviously the problem was from the outset, I forget your name, but
Shirley
mentioned about how do we get in this problem. And the problem happens is with government entities and actually large corporations, they tend to make promises when times are good, and those promises are going to be bloated, going to be higher than maybe they should have been, and then you get into problems later on. If people know ahead of time, you need to underpromise and overdeliver. That ain't going to solve the problem now. Now we've got a problem that's got to be dealt with.
Now, I hear two different things. One is a question about how big the problem is, and another question is how do we address it? Sure.
Well, one thing that kind of bothers me, I'm not a state employee, although I am a teacher, but I'm in the private sector. And I have a 401k. And the mm-hmm. people that I work for said, this percentage, we will meet a certain percentage. Not one time in 15 years have they said, we're going to take away what we told you that we would meet. Now, I am able to add more if I want to, but not one time in 15 years have they said, no, we're not going to give this to you anymore. We're going to take away what we've been giving, and you have to make up that difference. And if they had done that to me, then I would have felt like that they were not the employer that I thought that they were. And that's why I feel sorry for state employees. In honesty, they entered into a system that they thought was going to be fair to them. And now the governor has just said, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to take this money. And as I understand it, that extra that those state employees are going to pay is going into a general fund, okay. Not even going back to their retirement. To me, that seems like a dishonest employer.
Okay. Brent.
Yeah, to follow up what Shirley said, I agree with her. This has been the arrangement, what people have planned their whole lives upon was this system. And then to come in now at this late date and change the rules, I think we feel a lot better, as Phil said, if they said, okay, here's the problem. Let's sit down, work out the problem. Let's figure out a fair way. People under less than 10 years, clearly, you know, we can change them. But that's not what has happened in this situation. It's just been some extreme thing that's been forced down our throat, and we've been blamed for all the problems, and I don't think it's fair.
Okay. Do you all not think if we do nothing, if we do nothing to change the system, is it going to crash?
We don't know enough information.
I don't have enough to know.
It shouldn't crash, but it will. I mean, if they need more money, you know, the system, I mean, a key contributor to the money for the system is the rate of return on the investment portfolio. And most people that are well versed in investments can likely suggest that they're not going to get the same returns now, because an investment portfolio is going to be a mixture of stocks and bonds and cash and stuff. Cash and bonds are getting very, very low rates of return, which means you're going to have to get much higher rates of return on speculation and stock prices persistently, indefinitely, to bail out the system. That is not likely.
Is it fair to ask people to work more years to make sure their retirement is going to be solvent when that there's going to be money there?
I guess if you have a contract, it's very debatable, but I own my own business, and I foresee myself working probably until I'm 70, 80, you know, just because that's what I feel I need to do. And I can understand how state employees feel like they're being asked to give up a lot, but in actuality, they also get a lot in return. It's as if, you know, if you retire at 55 and you live to be 80 getting full benefits, I mean, that's 25 years that we're paying for you. You know, I'm as altruistic and as, you know, as civil-minded as anyone, but to support someone for 25 years, you know, when they're, it creates a little bit of problem for me. When I have to put the medical expenses for people at my company, for myself, you know.
Yeah. Rosalind, I think
I think it's not fair, because okay. I am a former employee of the East Baton Rouge school system as a paraeducator, and I do have family and friends that are in the state system. I have sisters and brothers that work for the state. And why downsize, you know, and treat the employees socially? That's what, on a social benefit.
Is it fair to ask for extra contribution to the retirement? Is that a tax?
Well, it's fair to ask for extra contributions, but I don't think that it's fair to ask for extra contributions, and it doesn't even go to solve the basic problem. It's going to a general fund. The general fund should stand on its own or fail on its own, and the state employee's retirement system should not be part of the bailout for the state fund. It should be focused on its own problem, the retirement of the state employees, not take that money from this group and put it over here, and heavens knows where it's going to go in the general fund.
So,
if I understand it, the retirement system is being funded out of the general fund anyway because it's not carrying its own weight. It's not making enough money to pay what it actually owes.
Okay, Brent?
If I can follow up on what Ronald says, I think part of the frustration with state workers is all these many years we were told that it was going to be funded, and the previous governors and legislators didn't do the right thing as far as funding the unfunded liability. So now to trust them with that extra 3% is really hard for us, and it's not going to even go toward the unfunded liability. That's a very scary proposition.
Okay. Do you think do you have confidence that this solution will fix the problem? Oh, and I think you were waiting to jump in.
To me, it's a matter of which pocket. Like, if you give it to the general fund is responsible for providing whatever contribution is actually needed to make the payments, and I believe there's a state law that allows the payments to retirees or the unfunded money that needs to go to the retirement systems is first call on the state treasury. So that means ultimately you're looking to all the taxpayers to pay the bill, whether the money is supposedly there on an actuary basis today or not. And saying that it's more risky to give the general fund the money than to give the retirement system, we've got a lot of golf courses that aren't worth very much money anymore that retirement system money went to. So I don't see that it's necessarily safer not to give it to the general fund, because the general fund ultimately is going to have to pay the bill anyway.
Okay.
Okay. Philip?
I would think most, we talked about this a good bit before the show, and I would think most Louisiana citizens would want to have that money earmarked for the solving of this problem. I think they want this problem to be self-contained and solved. I think that makes sense.
So you feel better about it if we're asking people to sacrifice, let's put the money in a lockbox.
Yeah, it may not be. It may not. Right. Thank you, Al Gore.
Not necessarily a good lockbox.
Right.
Who has the key?
It may not be necessary, but perception is very important. And if we know that the money is earmarked for that, and we're dealing with that problem specifically, and we can also judge the progress, because that money's going in there. We can see how much money we have in there year by year by year, and we can see, are we solving the problem?
Well, this is a great conversation, but this is all the time we have for this portion of our show. When we return, we'll be joined by a panel of experts to further explore state pension reform. Welcome back to Louisiana Public Square. Tonight we're discussing the governor's retirement system reform package. Joining us now is our panel of experts. Frank Joubert is the director of the Retired State Employees Association, or RSEA, which also represents active state workers. Robert Travis Scott is the president of the Public Affairs Research Council of Louisiana. His organization is currently working on an analysis of the state's retirement system debt, due for release by the beginning of April. Alan Reynolds served as the director of the Department of State Civil Service for nearly 10 years. He is currently a board member of the RSEA. Representatives John Bell Edwards, Kevin Pearson, and Joe Robidoux were scheduled to appear this evening, but are still in the House chambers debating education reform proposals. Before we go to our audience, I'd like to ask each member of the panel to briefly respond to the question. Just how serious is this problem, and what are we going to do about it? Alan?
Well, the total system debt for the four state systems, and there's a difference between state systems and statewide systems. The state systems are the ones the state's responsible for. The total debt is about $18.5 billion. About $6.5 billion of that relates to the state employee system, which is the system that most of the reform package is pointed toward. That debt is, in 1988, the state adopted a constitutional amendment which required that debt be paid off. In 1992, the scheduled payments for that debt payoff was changed dramatically, and what it did was basically backload a lot of the payments toward the end. And until 2013, which is next fiscal year, most of the payments that are being made on that debt are interest-only payments. We will only begin to pay off principal next year, but by 2029, that initial system debt will be fully paid off. So the problem is big, but the state has already begun an effort toward solving much of the problems that we face.
Robert, would you agree?
Well, Kirby, whether you're a fiscal conservative and you're concerned about too much state spending, or whether you are a more liberal thinker and you're concerned about not enough state spending, especially on issues like health care, social services, and higher education, then I think you should be very concerned about this issue, because next year, the amount of money for state retirement systems is going to be about $2 billion, and that's what it's going to cost the state. And that amount is going to be going up year after year after year for a number of years on into the future, especially as we deal with this large unfunded accrued liability issue. All of this money we're talking about is going to be eating in to other expenses that the state is going to have, and it's going to be affecting the state budget. So I know we'll be talking more about how we unpack all this later on, but that's the fundamental issue. It is a problem.
Frank, what's your perspective?
I would agree that there is an unfunded accrued liability that the systems presently have, but it took 40 or 50 years to get that way. And frankly, the system is on a repayment schedule to bring that debt down over the next 20 to 30 years, and I feel like, just to put the retirees at ease, there's $9.5 billion in that system. The system is earning a respectable rate of return on their investments. They are getting member contributions from the employees and from the employer. So just to let the retirees know, that there is no panic that should be at this point in time that they're not going to get their retirement checks. And I feel like there's no overnight fix that should be put forth, but it should take another 20, 30, 40 years to correct it. The state is an employer in perpetuity. It's not like a private sector corporation that needs to fix this thing overnight. It took that long to get this way. I think we can allow for another 30 to 40 years to fix it.
Philip, you would ask how big this problem is. Do you feel like your question has been answered?
Not really, because the problem with any of these pension systems is the assumptions you make going in. And I know I saw the state of California just the other day reduce their rate of return assumptions from 7.75% down to 7.5% return. I don't think that the assumptions that the LASERS program or the other programs are making at, I think LASERS assuming an 8.25% return on a diversified portfolio of investments, I don't think that they're going to get that. They may get that over 50 years, but I don't think they'll get that over 10 or 20 years. So the overall rate of return of the system, if it's 5% instead of 8.25%, the problems may be way bigger than what we're talking about. I would like to see some numbers out there on some really conservative figures.
Are we understating the problem?
Well, look, it is right that the LASERS is basically based on an expectation of about 8.25% going forward on a long-range basis for the returns. And there are a lot of people who think that's very optimistic. One of the concerns is if you made it what some people think is more realistic and lowered it, all of a sudden you'd owe a lot more money in order to meet the expectation of the new UAL, which you'd have to calculate. Then you'd have a new liability. And, you know, that's one of the reasons that I understand that the administration is proposing a new type of system for new employees that wouldn't affect current employees, but any new employees would go to what's called a cash balance plan. And basically what this would do is it would give you a floor so that the money that's the employees in the state put into the program for each employee you wouldn't lose, so you'd have sort of a Social Security type of protection there. But the gains that you might make would be tied to the market. You basically would make about what your portfolio would get every year. Say you did return 8% one year. Well, you'd get 7% of that, take a percentage off, bank it towards the bad years. So what you have is this idea that's being proposed, which creates a new type of system for retirees that's more, I think, realistically based on what the expectations of the market might be rather than this type of assumption you're saying here. I will note that if you look at the retirement system's returns, it depends on, in history, it depends on what period of time you look at. If you look at a 5 or a 10 year period back into history on the return, you're going to see very low rates of return in the 3-5% range. But if you look at a 20 year return, you will see a bigger range. I think the overall cumulative amount is about between 7 and 8% over a 20 year period going back.
One thing Robert mentioned, and I think it's important for all of us to mention and to note, that state employees do not participate in Social Security. So when we're talking about something like a cash balance plan, that's basically their retirement program if it were to be implemented. There's no fallback on Social Security as a base for those state employees. They're totally dependent on what they're going to receive from that retirement system. And that's very much unlike what you face in, or what you find in the private sector.
Shirley, you were trying to jump in.
Well, if you guys are saying that we're fixing this problem in 20, 30, or 40 years, it will be fixed. Is that right? As I understand what you've said to us, then why is the governor asking state employees to pay more into their retirement, thus making their salaries less each month, and he's taking state money out of their retirement? If this problem is being fixed, then why is the governor doing this? Because it sounds to me like then if it's going to be fixed, why are you putting such a load on your state employees?
Part of the problem is the fact that the way the schedule was set up when it was revised was a backloaded payment schedule, which means that the payments, in order to address that unfunded accrued liability, has to grow over time. And it begins to go down in a few years, but it's still growing. And so as a result of that, the amount of money that the employers have to pay as the match goes up each year. And as budgets get tighter, it's harder and harder for the state to make those payments and still fund the other things that they need funded. But that's the rationale. The decision that was made in 1992 to change the payment schedule has really had an impact, dramatic impact, on this situation.
So that's where the mistake was made in 92?
That's a part of the mistake.
Well, look, Robert, I mean, there's been a lot of mistakes made.
Yeah.
There's a huge, what they call initial unfunded accrued liability that occurred in the late, that added up in the late 1980s, and they set a payment plan to try to work off some of that over time. But since then, there has been additional unfunded accrued liability under the system since that time, where we're still not having enough money into the system to meet what we think might be our long-term obligations. And so we have really a bunched problem, both historically and what has been ongoing. The amount of money that the state has been putting into it, they sort of lowballed it early on. And the state's been making the payments. I mean, it has been meeting the schedule. It hasn't been underfunded in the sense of trying to meet the schedule. In fact, there have even been some additional payments put into it. But what we're facing right now is a period of time when they're escalating those payments. It's not like there's one big balloon payment in 2029. What you see is a lot of escalating payments now to try to draw a lot of that down. And maybe later on I can get back to the issue about the employee contribution part.
I wanted to answer that question, because that's the very question we're asking. If we're going to raise the employees' contributions by 3%, why not put it to shore up the systems and protect those benefits if that's the intent, or to pay down the UAL? To divert it to the general fund is exactly what our main argument is and my biggest concern with that particular proposition.
Let me try to explain what's happening with this particular piece of it. And let's set aside for a moment the issue about making the retirement age 67 and some of these other changes in the terms of retirement. And just look at this one piece of the proposal. What I understand the administration is proposing is that in the sort of base cost, if you will, the normal cost that the employer would put in, that would be reduced by about 3%. Don't get me wrong, the state would still be paying an enormous amount for the overall cost for the retirement system, but in terms of that ongoing maintenance of the system, it would knock it down by 3%, but the agencies would pay. The employees would go up about 3%, and for a lot of employees, that would be in the neighborhood of going from about 8% to about 11%. What this does is this rebalancing of it. But what it does is it doesn't really contribute to the UAL. That particular mechanism isn't going to have much of any impact on the unfunded accrued liability. What it will do is it will free up money that the agency was going to pay toward retirement, and it's going to pay that money they can spend on other things that the agency would have had money to spend, would have spent on. But the money, the extra 3% the employees are doing, that is deferred compensation. It's not going to the general fund. That is going to the retirement program. I think that's a big misunderstanding. It's this other part of it. When you bring down the agency amount, that's where the sort of new general fund money is coming from. I hope that explains it.
Let me move in a slightly different. Carolyn, you had a question about the impact of this on state workers. Do you want
their retirement system?
Yes.
If, say, for instance, that if we, I forgot, what was my question again?
If we move to 67, or we take into some of these accounts, are we going to lose a lot of state workers? Are people going to start retiring? Are we going to lose our workforce? Are we going to lose our services? What's the impact on state government?
Yeah. About 20% of our workforce right now will be impacted by the retroactive provisions and the increased age, and the 5-year average comp. Those folks are going to have to make a decision. These are our most experienced employees, many of them occupying supervisory positions, having tremendous experience. They're going to have to make a very difficult choice in a very short period of time. By October the 1st, they'll have to decide whether or not to accept the conditions under which they will be employed or to leave. If a substantial number of those folks leave, agencies will find themselves in a very difficult position for providing state service. Difficult position, and these folks are not easily replaced. They're the most senior, the most experienced, the leaders of the organization. We're talking about registered nurses at our hospitals, engineers at the Department of Transportation, the Department of Natural Resources, master's degrees in social work, auditors. Again, you know, you build up these staffs over years, and if we face a tremendous outflow of these folks, it's going to be really difficult for agencies to function.
Robert, is this part of a plan to reduce the size of state government? Does it all fit in within some bigger objective?
Let's not forget another aspect of the current retirement program, which is that you can get out early with your retirement. Right, and depending on who you are and what the circumstances are, you could get out at 55 or 60, and move on out. In fact, there's almost an incentive in the current program to leave and then go get another job. And we've seen plenty of examples of that in state government. So there is a dynamic in the current system that doesn't necessarily hold you too tightly. And I do think we need to look at this whole issue of workforce culture in state government. Are we still in an era when people will come to work for state government and expect to work in state government for 40 years? I don't know. I mean, I think it's a more transient workforce culture that we're in now, and people want to move in and out of government. And I think you want to have a retirement plan that you can take with you a little bit more easily.
Kurt,
I have a question. What's the rationale for sort of targeting the laser program as opposed to the other systems that they have? Why is that one seems to be targeted so heavily as opposed to the other?
I'll give you my answer to that one. It's called divide and conquer. Okay, they're not picking on the school teachers because they're attacking them on another front with the education reforms. The state police and those other groups who are more powerful than the state employees, they're more organized, they're more vocal, they can get their message out. I think they're leaving those folks alone. But let's be honest, I think they'll be the next ones in line, the teachers, the school employees, the state police, they'll be coming behind us. And I think they even left out judges and elected officials, another powerful group of individuals. Again, they're taking the weakest of the herd, the state employees, and leading the lambs to slaughter. Then we'll become the template or the model for everyone else in years to come.
And I agree that that's probably what will happen, is that teachers will be next. There's one other thing to keep in mind, though. If you're going to affect the teachers' retirement, you're going to have to bring the school districts into the conversation, because they have a lot of that responsibility to pay for their part of the retirement systems for teachers.
Paul, you look like you're ready to jump in.
Yes. I was wondering about the panelists' feelings on the effect that the proposed legislation will have on state employees who are presently vested, who have reached eligibility. For example, myself, I'm a 20-plus-year employee. I'm less than 55, so I'm not exempt. I'm eligible right now, today, for an actuarially reduced retirement. I can walk in and do it now. Under the proposed legislation, that would go away. I wouldn't be able to retire until 67. And in my case, the effect is compounded because I bought 5 years of airtime. If I have to stay until age 67, I'll have 41 years of service. Well, at 40 years, I get 100% of my salary. So that extra year that I paid a whole lot of money for has basically just been taken away, and I got nothing for it. So I'd be interested in the panelists' comments on that situation vis-a-vis the fairness as well as the legality under the federal and state constitutions.
Well, I think there's some pretty serious constitutional questions about the application of this to folks who are already in the system, whether they're vested or not. And I think there will be some legal challenges if any of these bills are actually passed and do apply to folks who are already there. I asked the question today of someone about what happens when the person gets to 40 years and under your situation, and the answer was you continue to pay your 11%.
And forget about my year of airtime.
Yeah. Now, that's under the proposed legislation. You know, I spent my career in government, and I truly hope that we will be able to work through this, and in the end we will come out with something that will not really devastate the state's workforce. There are just too many critical services being provided, and I truly hope we can work through this, but I don't know. That's yet to be seen.
Elton, did you have a question?
No, I don't really have a question. I kind of think that
everybody needs to compromise a little bit. I'm in the private sector. Lots of companies have done away with their retirement systems. This cash basis that they're talking about is basically what everybody has today. General Motors people had to take some serious changes that they didn't want. I don't think that's applicable to the state because the state really doesn't go bankrupt. It'll just raise taxes or something. But these people's state employees' retirement systems are really not in danger of not being paid. But so making Frank, a few adjustments is probably not that big of a deal.
But let me make one comment, and then Frank can. In 2006, for the state employee system, there were some changes implemented. One set the retirement age at 60 and eliminated for new employees the 30-year retirement at any age. The second thing was it raised the contribution rate for those new employees from 7.5% to 8%. And three, we changed the final average compensation period from the last 36 months to 5 years. So there already have been some adjustments, and frankly, our association supported those changes. Nobody is more concerned about the financial well-being of those retirement systems than are the folks who are members of them.
But those changes were addressing new
prospective
hires.
That's right, new hires.
But this new legislation that we're proposing affects everybody.
That's
the people
correct.
That were covered under that particular new plan, but now all the original employees and then the right. ones that hit what you just said, that's everybody's right. being affected by this new plan.
That is correct.
That's our basic argument against some of the reforms, as they call them, is that it's a rule changer in the middle of the game. Employees came on with a certain set of rules and expectations. When I started with the state in 1973 for $575 a month, they told me I could retire with a 30 years and X number of dollars pension based on a percentage of my salary. That was what I signed up for. That was the rules that were in effect. I upheld my end of the bargain. We're asking the state for those employees who are currently a part of the system that we uphold the end of the bargain for them as well. The new employees coming in, like Alan said, in the past we've supported reforms. We're still in the same posture. We'd be happy to look at other ideas that were on the table, but we really don't want them messing with the benefits that have been promised to the current employees under the rules under which they were hired.
Paul, you were ready to jump in.
I did. I wanted to just make a point that when you start comparing lasers to the private sector, it's not really a fair comparison. As Mr. Reynolds pointed out, Laser's members don't pay into Social Security. Moreover, the percentage that Laser members pay in is more than people pay into Social Security. And for the last 2 years, President Obama has given workers a payroll tax cut, the amount they pay into Social Security. State employees, of course, didn't benefit from that. And now we're being asked to pay more when we're already paying more than everybody else.
And I think he make a good point, especially about Social Security. But do remember, a lot of the getting out of the retirement system and getting your full benefits tends to be a lot more generous, I think, for government employees under these programs than it is in the private sector, and a lot more guaranteed.
Yeah, that's one of the concerns, is if Social Security is better, you'd pay less and get close to the same thing. Why aren't you more interested, or why isn't that one of the proposals to put forward?
Of course, there's always this conversation. Why don't you just get rid of the exemption and let government employees have Social Security and tack a 401k on top of that? I asked Governor General this just a couple of weeks ago. He said, "Well, I don't have any confidence in the federal Social Security system." But another, probably more real reason is that if you get into the system now, there's an unfunded accrued liability in the Social Security system, and we would actually be paying for the sins of others in the past. We'd be probably not getting a best return on our money by getting into Social Security at this point. Probably be better staying out of it and you know, going through a different retirement program. That's probably the real reason.
Robert, there's a lot of talk about constitutionality. Has this been looked at in other states?
And let's be clear about what we do know about constitutionality. And tell me if this is your impression, too, because I think this is true. But I don't think, if you're actually already retired and you're getting benefits, I'm pretty sure that's a pretty strong constitutional protection there. I don't think there's any real debate over that. I think if you're already retiring getting benefits, that's not going to be effective.
We would agree with that, yeah. But we would add one corollary. If they can change the benefit structure for the current employees, who we also feel are protected by the Constitution, what's to stop them from changing for the retirees also?
Well, I think there's a different mandate there, but like I said, I don't think that's the intention of this legislation.
Well, I know it's. I hope it's not.
I hope not too.
But that's what we're.
That would clearly be something you wouldn't want to see.
That's one of the things we're very suspect about. That if they can do it for the current active employees, can they do it to the retired?
Yeah, there are two aspects. There's the Constitution that says we want to. There's the U.S. Constitution that says we want to protect contracts, and there's also the state Constitution that says we want to protect contracts with the employees on. But you have to remember, what does the contract say? What does it imply? There's also a mandate to keep a healthy retirement system. So you have to balance those things out, and I think we'll have to argue this thing through and look at it through to see what some of these issues are. But the constitutional issues are something we definitely need to keep an eye on and see if that's going to be a problem.
Okay, Shirley.
The problem I see with this, aren't they trying to rush this through without the public really knowing what they're wanting to do? That's what I've been seeing it, like what they did with the teachers last week, and then this problem with retirement, is that there hasn't been enough discussion about all these various aspects of it. Instead of just we're going to vote this and this is the way it's going to go, that I think that's what's scaring a lot of people, is that something's being pushed on us without realizing exactly what it entails.
Kurt, I think you wanted to chime in.
Oh, I didn't want to jump in. I was just going to underline that point. It seems like the whole tone of this legislative session is like my way or the highway, and if you're not 100% behind everything I say, you need to sort of lose your chairmanship or your post, or the governor demands that you be fired from a private sector job. I think that we could get a lot more done if we would talk instead of just set up so many firm lines. And it seems like when I was reading the packet, it seems like we believe this, and there doesn't seem to be any middle ground, where it seems like some language changes, some tightening up of language, to change the age requirements could it wouldn't satisfy everybody or anybody, but it would at least compromise and bring the sides closer together. But it just seems like the tone is what's the problem.
I agree with you completely, Kurt. And I think that these education bills that they've been pushing through so fast, I think that's a mistake. It makes it look like you're hiding something. Yeah, and I'm not saying they're hiding something, but if something wrong comes out of it, they can say, well, we didn't get a full debate. We didn't get the amount of time we needed. We didn't get the amount of time to consider what we needed to do. I agree with you.
Does the fact that you can only consider certain things in alternate legislative sessions have any effect on this?
It could, if that 3% increase in the employee contribution is in fact ruled a tax. It would not be allowed in this session because it's not a fiscal session. So it could affect that in particular, as we appreciate the situation. I'm not a lawyer, but that's the understanding I have.
If they considered a tax, as they did last year, that one piece of this plan, then that would be a problem. I don't think they're going to consider it a tax this year.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Philip, you're...
I would think that taking an additional year to hammer out the... To work out more of the solutions to this problem would make sense. I mean, retirement is a long-term issue, and the year's not going to make much difference there. I mean, education might be considered different by some people because the child is 1 year further behind and getting a different type of education. But
let's not forget that his pension proposal is overlapped with what his state budget is and the governor. I mean, he is counting on saving a lot of money in next year's state budget by getting some of these pension program reforms passed. So he's putting pressure on the legislature to get his pension bills passed. It'll help him loosen up the budget. That's part of the game that's being played right now.
Do you know how much it would affect the budget in the 1 year?
Yeah, it depends on which numbers you look at. The 3.3% trade-off is about $70 million. The general fund impact is about $120 million. But you also have them saying that the overall savings impact is about $450 million, depending on which figure is right. And we'll see that during the debate, I hope. That's a lot of money.
So... Now, in terms of this, we've heard a lot of criticism about if we don't do this, it's going to impact other areas of spending, healthcare, higher education, even primary and secondary education. Is that fair? Is that true?
Let me say this about, it goes back to Alan's point earlier about the massive exodus of state employees that would occur. I've been told by the experts, and I don't consider myself an expert, by the experts at Lasers, that there would be such a mass exodus of state employees that any actuarial savings that they would expect to occur from these reforms would actually be more than absorbed and actually lost and actually cost the system money because more people would be leaving, and the benefit payout, because the people would not be paying into the system any longer. Moreover, they'll be drawing a benefit for a much longer period because they'll be exiting and starting to draw to retirement immediately. Any purported savings will be lost and then actually maybe even cost the state government more money.
Kurt?
But wouldn't they just rehire people under the new where they don't have to pay them as much?
Well,
I mean,
yes.
I understand that we'd be losing a lot of seniority, but well, it's not as if – I think that's a false argument that the whole system
well,
would
collapse. Well, let me address that if I can. Throughout my career, our competitiveness with the private sector, we have lagged anywhere from 10% to 20% to 30% in pay, in actual dollars in cash. And one of the ways that we've always made up for that is to say to the folks, the potential employees, look, you've got a little bit lower salary coming in, but we've got other things that will help make up for that. What will happen under this new plan is that we will no longer be able to make that argument. So I expect to see entrance salaries begin to rise. And whether or not they will rise as much as the savings will be, I don't know. But salary structures will go up.
I agree. I'm in HR. And I know right now with all the proposals, the number of experienced employees are now looking at they're going to have to retire if all these go into effect, and it will be a large number. And how someone in HR, how will I recruit someone who's going to want to come to work for the state whenever the state of Louisiana seems to be setting the precedence of going back on their promises to the public servants who have been working for them? I mean, and this 3%, I don't see how it's not viewed as a tax, because since it's not going to help the retirement fund, I can't see how it's not considered a tax.
I guess my understanding of that, I think you make some good points, but I think the 3% the employees are playing goes as deferred compensation to the retirement system. I think where you hear about the impact on the general fund is reducing the agency core base rate or the normal rate, bringing that down 3%, and that flows up, and that gives them extra money they can spend.
The way I understand it, I will have pay another 3% into the retirement, but that 3% is not going into my retirement. It's going into the general fund.
I mean, I've heard the same thing from many people, and I keep going back to the people who are designing this thing, and they keep telling us it's going in as deferred compensation into the fund, and it will be yours to take. Now, as this debate goes on, I hope we can find the truth of that, because I have heard it both ways, but I'm just telling you, we're hearing two different things right now, and hopefully we can get to the truth
as this debate
goes on. Another good reason not to rush it through.
if you go with what you believe, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, because I honestly don't know, but what you're saying is the 3% is almost a wash. The state employee is paying a 3% increase, basically, but the agency doesn't have to kick in their 3%. That money is going to the general fund. So the 3% the employee is paying is still not reducing the unfunded liability, because their 3% is going in, but 3% is going out.
That's the point I was making earlier.
So
exactly.
It's a zero.
It's a zero.
It is not reducing the unfunded liability.
That's correct.
Actually.
That's what I was saying earlier.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't know if that's the correct way it's going or not. I'm just hearing what you're saying.
No, I think that's what's going to happen.
All right, we're almost out of time. Okay. Tell us what's going to happen and what it means for the state.
I want to just say this for the record before we close out, is that we're not obstructionists. Someone mentioned earlier that they're ramrodding these bills through at, you know, with due haste. I think we do need to bring all the players to the table. I've talked to legislators. Some of them think some of these reforms are patently unfair, and I'm talking about whether they're Democrat or Republican. They're looking at it with a fair-minded view, and they are taking a fair perspective on it. And I think we do need to sit down and have all parties at the table to come to some sort of consensus on what is good and what is not good and how to implement it for the betterment of the retirees, the employees, and the taxpayers of Louisiana.
Are you optimistic we're going to do that?
I'm not optimistic, but I'm asking for that opportunity to sit at the table with the players and become a part of the solution and not just an obstructionist.
Robert?
Real quick, I think raising the age to 67 for retirement is going to be a very, very, very tough sell with this legislature, including the conservative Republicans on this. I think you'll see the cash balance plan get a really good, interesting discussion, and we ought to really take a serious look at that. We haven't concluded it's a great idea at par, but we're looking at it, and I think we ought to seriously discuss it. It might be a good solution.
And Alan?
I'm optimistic that that we will have good discussions and that in the end we will have something that that will look substantially different from what we're looking at now.
Okay. Well, we've run out of time for our question and answer segment. We'd like to thank our panelists, Mr. Jobert and Mr. Scott and Mr. Reynolds, for their insights on this month's topic. When we come back, we'll have a few closing comments.
Well, Kirby, I'm sorry we didn't have any legislators here with us in this conversation, but some knowledgeable experts.
It would have been nice to have hear from the legislators.
Well, they're rushing through a lot of education reform packages right now, and there is some strategy, I guess, in not having resistance build up to anything if in this session, if you will.
Yeah, they're definitely moving quick on a lot of issues.
So. Well, this is indeed a complicated, and if anything, we're all going to understand what UAL, unfunded accrued liability, is after all this, right?
I thought it was a sports league. So.
Well, that's all the time we have for this edition of Louisiana Public Square. We encourage you to visit our website at lpb.org/public square. While you're there, take this month's survey, view extended interview clips, and comment on tonight's show. Remember, you can also follow us now on Facebook and Twitter.
School vouchers, revised teacher pay, additional power for principals. These are just some of the measures in Governor Jindal's high-priority education reform package this session. What will it all mean for teachers, students, and taxpayers? Tune in next month as Louisiana Public Square examines Education Reform 2012.
Good night, and remember you can track the current session nightly on LPB's Capitol Beat at 6:57 and 9:57 p.m. Good night, everyone.